ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Texas Tailgate Sports Bar Patio in Edo. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, and if you're in the neighborhood, we would absolutely love to see you. We are having a great old day. Brian McDonald is in, by the way, for Jeremy, because Jeremy is doing less important things like Cougar basketball in March Madness in the tournament. But we are having a great old time, and BMAC, always good to have you along board for the three-ish hours as we recap everything tournament and otherwise. What's going on, man?
Oh, man, I love this place. I was telling Juan, who I don't know what his technical
Juan owns the joint.
Okay, I wasn't sure if he was manager or owner, but I was telling Juan when I got here, this place used to be like a barbecue place years ago.
Okay.
But anyway, me and my buddies before Astros games would come in here because if you ate, they would let you park for free. And I asked Juan, hey, is that still the deal? Apparently it is. So not only do you come out today and watch us, watch the March Madness, but come out before Astros games. You come in, have a drink, you park for free. And it's just, I mean, Minute Maid, or not, Dyken Park now is what?
The Dyke is a couple blocks away.
Like a half a mile down Texas Avenue. Yeah. It's nothing. So great spot to come out today, but also during baseball season.
Texas Tailgate, it is officially 2401 Texas Avenue. But I'm telling you, literally I'm looking at the Dynamo Stadium as we speak.
Yeah, we can see it right now through the window here.
And as we are watching a multitude of televisions, having a good old time. The weather's beautiful. The outside patio is a perfect place to be. They got food trucks outside, so there's lots of food as well. They've got happy hour till 7 o'clock. You're going to have a good old time, and we're going to be out here all the way through then. So stop on by, hang with us, and have some fun. And oh, by the way, the Cougs already won. So your Thursday, hopefully, and your brackets are not ruined, and you've got that first one out of the way. And they took care of business rather easily against
38.
S-I-E-U or yeah. S-I-U-E.
S-I-U-E. I mean, what's the saying, Joel? Great, good teams win, great teams cover. I believe the spread of this was like 28.
20.5, I think.
28.5, and they won by 38. And probably could have won by more, but they obviously started pulling guys. Like, at, I think by the 12-minute mark in the second half, a lot of the guys starters were on the bench.
Mr. P got in, masterpiece kid.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I must have missed that. But you look at the minutes for your starters. I mean, Tugler got 17 minutes. Juwan Roberts, not surprisingly, only played 20. The highest among the starters was Sharp at 25 minutes. So these guys are obviously usually over 30, so a good amount of rest for Kelvin Sampson starters.
I'm going to tell you what the best thing about this was, Brian, you kind of touched on it. I almost didn't want to play Roberts in this game.
I didn't either. They didn't need him.
But I do know that stranger things have happened, right?
And, well, sure.
The Maryland-Baltimore County upset.
It's happened twice,
which would have everybody on, you know, panic alert that you can't take anything for granted. So I get that Roberts was going to get some time, but this was the blessing that you needed. This was the massive blowout in which he doesn't have to, you know, risk getting hurt. He got a little burn in, checked his cardio out, didn't do too much. They did a ton and got them what they needed to do. Because, I mean, as much as we have talked about the matchups, the brackets, and who's got a tough bracket, I think U of H might be facing one of their biggest challenges in the next round, depending on who wins the Georgia-Gonzaga game. And we had Reed Geddes on the other day, and he was the only guy that I've heard
that basically was dismissive,
going, I mean, Gonzaga in this discussion? I'm going, well, as Jeremy and I discussed, Georgia's got an NBA lottery-type pick player on their roster. Gonzaga went to and if you're not familiar with Gonzaga, one, they're extremely well-coached by Mark Few.
You live under a rock if you're not familiar with Gonzaga.
We know what they do every year in the tournament. We know what they do quietly every year on the West Coast. But the biggest thing was they made a change, much like the Rockets did a few weeks ago, where they flip-flopped and went to a big lineup where they go two bigs that are about 7 feet tall and it opens up the floor. Since they've done that, they have been even tougher. And if U of H faces Gonzaga, that is going to be a tough game for the Cougs. I pick them to win it, but that is I want Georgia to win tonight.
Yeah, I would go with that as well. I mean, I think you can make the argument that their toughest test to get out of their own side of the bracket and to the Final Four might be in the round of 32 against Gonzaga.
Basically what I was insinuating.
I mean, the other side, if things go, you know, according to chalk, Tennessee would be their opponent in the Elite Eight. And obviously Tennessee is a good team, had a great year in the SEC. But I've got my own bias against
Rick Barnes.
I know what his tournament history is as a Longhorns fan. And I really think the styles make fights, and Tennessee also being a defensive style, I don't think it's a team that's going to push Houston. We saw what a great defensive effort they had today against obviously an overmatched team, but they held SIUE to 2 of 24 from behind the arc. I mean, I think Houston would beat Tennessee, handle them easy. If they get past Gonzaga, and I agree with you, I think they will, but I think it's their toughest test. If they get past Gonzaga, I think they're going to the Final Four.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I have them in my Final Four. I do have my biggest concern, as you mentioned, as I was saying it, I have my biggest concern about the fact that you know this second round matchup is as tough as just about anybody could ask for as a one seed. And it's going to be interesting to see how they play, because the one thing that you can take away from today as well that was a huge thing is what I've been harping on all year, and that's defense travels. And I think that, you know, a lot of times when you get teams that are up-tempo, that play a style that, you know, you play a very high-seeded team, but they're not used to playing up-and-down basketball. Well, it's like pick-up basketball. At a certain point, when you play up-tempo, and you can run a team off the floor. And I think that what U of H does, because regardless of what you think of their offense, and their offense is elite, but the fact that they can go in and just strangle you from the minute the ball goes up defensively is going to translate so well for them against Gonzaga, Georgia, whoever they play, and it really showed right from the jump today, as you mentioned. They just basically shut down anything and everything defensively.
Yeah, 2 of 24 again from SIUE from three-point line. I think even more impressive, not only was the what they shot, but the fact that SIUE only got up 49 shots to begin with to the UH's 66. Obviously, as a team trailing the entire game, it shows what a great defense Houston is. If they can not only force them into bad shots, but prevent them from getting shots up, period. And as you're talking there, obviously, I agree with your point, the defense travels. But I think what you're talking about with their offense illustrates another point that it plays in their favor as they make their way through March Madness. And it's that, unlike maybe previous, I know they've had good offenses in the past, but I think they have more shooting than they've ever had, and I think they're more variable in the ways they can beat you than they've been in with previous Kelvin Sampson teams. So I do think that plays in their favor as they – obviously, the script will change depending on the opponent. The style they have to beat these teams with will change depending on the style of their opponent. But I think this team, more so than the past teams, even the team that got to the Final Four – is more equipped to beat teams in different ways than other Kelvin Sampson teams.
I mean, look, I think in the past they've always had that defensive edge, which is a staple of what Kelvin Sampson coaches. But I think from an offensive perspective, you're right. I mean, they are one of the top four three-point shooting teams in the nation.
Right.
They're shooting 40-plus percent. That's unheard of in a lot of ways, especially unheard of in the NBA. But for a college program, you're shooting better than 40% for three-point range. You shot 36% today. You've got four guys that can score 20 points anytime they want.
And
that is a luxury that when we talk about the deepest teams, yes, there are teams like Florida that can go too deep at every position, and they've got, you know, a bunch of guys. But you've got four guys that can legitimately get you 20 at any point, and then you've got three bigs that can defend any big in the nation. That, and you play the kind of defense that you play. That's a formula for a long run and a lot of success. And like I said, a lot of teams, and you watch this, a lot of times with the smaller schools too, they play in smaller gyms. They get into these bigger environments, and as the tournament goes on, as they try and make deeper runs, the crowd, the depth perception, things that they haven't dealt with become bigger problems. You don't have these problems with U of H. They've played in every gym. They've played in every environment. They've taken on every Q1 in the toughest, you know, if not for the fact that the SEC made a hell of a comeback this year basketball-wise. It's the toughest conference in the nation. And all they do is just run the table and win games. They are tournament tested and they're ready to go.
Yeah, you could argue it. I mean, obviously they've been tournament tested. It's crazy when you look back at their history. Not that you don't know this, but like before Kelvin Sampson took over, they went from I think it was a 26-year period from 1991 to 2017. Where they made one tournament appearance under Tom Pinders. They got him with a miraculous run through their conference tournament at the time, obviously lost in the first round. A 26-year period, Joel, where they made the tournament one time. Now Kelvin Sampson, if you include the COVID year, where they would have made the tournament that year, it's eight straight years. They've won at least one game in every tournament during that span, and now we're talking about obviously making the Sweet 16 4 years in a row, Elite Eight, Final Four. They're definitely tournament tested, not only in the actual tournament, but you mentioned the strength of the conference they play in. only having one loss in conference for the entire season. You could argue that already proved before they even got to the tournament that they were tournament tested, going through that gauntlet in the Big 12 and coming out with only one regular season loss.
But talk about what else translates, Brian. Not only did they do what you said in terms of their overall conference record, they run the table on the road. I mean,
right.
When you talk about hostile environments, when you talk about dealing with the crowds and the, you know, the negativity, what else can you ask for from a team to run the table in the toughest conference in basketball?
They went into Kansas and won.
One in Fog Fieldhouse.
Went into Texas Tech and won.
Which you're not supposed to be able to do, and which Kansas holds their hat on as being one of the toughest environments to play in. That sets you up for a tournament team that has Juwan Roberts, who's on his sixth year. He's experienced.
Is it only six?
I think.
It feels like eight
it
or
does.
Nine.
But when you look at, like, their starters and the experience that comes with that as well, and you get Uzan, who comes over from a program and he wants to take it to the next level, and now he's here. And because
same with Cryer.
Coaching matters. You're right. And Cryer coming from Baylor. But the coaching matters too. And you got a guy that's been there, done that, and done it his whole career, no matter what school he's been at, to where nothing's going to surprise Kelvin. And Kelvin's going to be a guy we always talk about. You know, can you make halftime adjustments? Can you figure out things on the fly? Kelvin, his staff, I have no worries or qualms ever about the fact if they throw something different at him, they'll figure it out in two possessions. So U of H is set to basically be as good as any team in this country, getting to a Final Four and then winning a national championship. So you're right. I mean, I've heard people say, and I heard someone say this morning, Stephen A. Smith might have said, U of H, they've been on this run. Now they got to prove it. They got to show up, and they got to actually win it. You keep doing the things that they're doing, they're eventually going to win one because they're not going anywhere with the recruiting class they have coming in.
No,
they
got a great one, yeah.
But anything can happen in a one-and-done tournament to where it's just a phenomenal year for Kelvin and the Cougs no matter what happens and where this thing ends.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you're looking at Stephen A's right. They haven't won the national title, but Final Four, Elite Eight, then back-to-back Sweet 16s over these last 4 years. And it's not like in these matchups where you're looking at it and I've crushed Rick Barnes for. It's like, oh, you're losing to a team that's, you know, four seeds lower than you. It's situations where they've dealt with injury, obviously, in Final Four. I mean, you can't kill a team for getting to the Final Four and losing. I mean, it's not like that Villanova, it was Villanova who knocked them out in the Elite Eight. So they're not losing to these teams that are seeded much lower than them. I don't know if I like the thing where they've got to prove now that they can do it. Like, I think they've already proven that they can do it. Just when you get to a certain point, it becomes a crapshoot.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, so we got plenty to do on this show today. We've got plenty to cover. We've got lots to cover out of Astros camp with all the news that have been happening, including the flyball extravaganzas of Jose Altuve that everybody wants to talk about. A guy that I've been talking about a great deal. Gives you plenty to talk about on a pretty consistent basis. He's doing it again. He's making a good fight for a roster spot. We'll talk about that. We'll break down the Rockets last night with another win. I think it's now 8 in a row for them, and you're always a part of the show. 713-780-3776. You can call that number, text that number, hit us on all the social medias, the Twitch, the Twitter, the YouTube. We're there for you. It's BMAC and Joel taking you till 6 o'clock on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Texas Tailgate Sports Bar Patio in Edo. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey, back! We're having a good time out here. You should be, too. I mean, this place is unbelievable. And if you've never been and you want to hang out, look, Edo is kind of like the new hot spot. You know, everybody's starting to hang out and you know, enjoy their food and bev close to all the stadiums. But the Texas tailgate's amazing. The location is fantastic. Kitty corner from the Dynamo Stadium, right nearby the dike, and you know, not that far away from the Toyota Center. But you need it to make your destination for anything sports. But at the same time, the deck outside today in the sunshine is phenomenal.
Beautiful.
The food trucks are out there to keep you well fed with great food. The drinks inside are fantastic. It's a great environment. We'd love to see
Tons
you. We're
going
to be
TVs.
Here till 6 o'clock. Yeah, and of course, with all the tournament games, this is like... I heard people debating this on some of the debate shows, but like, I understand like the biggest sporting events, and for me as a golfer, I still love the Masters, and everybody loves Super Bowl Sunday.
Sure,
but the opening 4 days of the NCAA tournament is like second to none. I mean,
I agree. 100%.
No matter where you are, I mean, I see now, and I saw Quentin Grimes retweeting this, talking about shout out to the teachers that actually put TVs in their classrooms so the kids don't have to like try and sneak ways.
Did
to
you
find
have any
scores.
Of that growing up?
Well, first of all, I thought about this too.
Okay, I'm going to guess you're going to say you did what I did, but I was always conveniently sick as a kid, right around the middle of March.
Sure, but here's the other thing.
Okay,
depending on how old you are, right? The thing that aggravates me, but it's beautiful for us now, is we didn't have True TV and TBS and TNT,
very
and we
true.
Didn't have the ability. Even
it was
if
CBS
you had,
only.
Yeah, even if you had cable TV. You got the scores on whatever boring-ass game in the opening round was a blowout.
Not only was – yeah, but I'm sure you remember, but they put the bug in the upper left-hand corners how they used to do it, and it was tiny, too.
Yep.
Like, it's not now where it kind of takes up most of the top part of the screen. But, yeah, you only had CBS. Now we're really aging ourselves.
And it would just roll, and you're like, come on, I need to see how – you know, what's the score of the game that I'm concerned with? And instead, the main game was probably a blowout because it was the opening round. But there were three – really close games going down the stretch, and you're like, I can't see them. I just got to watch the scoreboard and hope I find out who won. Now, at least, thank God, you can go anywhere, including in your own home, and you can watch every game that matters, and that's what makes it even better. This is the best time to be a sports fan.
I think one of the more frustrating times I had trying to follow the action back in the olden days when it was only CBS was that first year that Butler made a run. Because I know I picked him in my bracket and got a bunch of grief from my boys. And it wasn't the game that was on here locally, so it was just the upper bug. And it was a one-point game. They were trailing, and they hit a buzzer beater to win the game. But the last time the bug came up, it just showed them down by 1 second and then went away. So I had to wait for it to come back up, and then obviously they end up winning by a point. But, yeah, thank God for the not only True TV and all that, but now you can also watch it on Max as well. So the options are limitless. But the best option, though, is out here at Texas Tailgate because not only do they have a bunch of TVs, that TV out in the patio is huge.
Massive.
It's a massive TV. So
bunch of Cougs fans were here watching the Cougars easily get to their first victory. A lot of games going on right now. The big shocker right now is McNeese State is actually taking Clemson to the woodshed. Some people thought that would be a huge upset, but I don't think anybody predicted that in the process Clemson would score 13 points in the first half. That's not 13 points, as Paul eloquently put it in the first quarter of a game, because we don't have quarters. That was 13 points in the entire first half, y'all. That's not supposed to happen.
31-13 a half. I mean, Sean put it during the break. It's like a blowout in college football, this score right now. I mean, obviously, game's not over. 18 points is not,
good luck with those second half adjustments.
Yeah. I'd be curious what the live betting line is for that. But that's certainly because I think the opening window here for March Madness had been pretty chalky. You technically had an upset with Creighton, but I mean, it's an 8-9 matchup.
Louisville, a lot of people thought was misseeded, but yeah, that was a big win for Creighton.
But other than that, it was completely chalky, and they weren't even close games. So, obviously not every game was a blowout like in their 1-16, but most of the games were all, Wisconsin won comfortably. Purdue, although they had some moments against a High Point where they end up winning by, 10-plus. But finally, we have some madness here for the brackets with McNeese State, again, up 31-13 at halftime. Just an embarrassing effort so far by Clemson.
Yeah, it's
which you hate to see a school that has Dabo Swinney have embarrassing.
And a lot of people had them going a couple of rounds. Some people thought Clemson might be an underdog pick to make a run. Instead, they look absolutely terrible. McNeese State with a huge win, and that's
well,
that,
not
again,
yet. Not yet.
They're going to get it. You want to bet me? I'll take McNeese State.
You're
going
to have to give me some
that?
Odds here. You're going to have to give me some odds. But I mean, let's. Let's not forget that could potentially be an opponent for the Cougars down the road. So that's not only is it shocking and fun as far as just following March Madness in general, but it's also potentially beneficial for the Cougs as McNeese State could be an opponent here down the road for them.
Yeah, no doubt. And with that, I mean, my Wisconsin Badgers won by 20. I was happy about
congrats
that because I was
congrats to your Badgers.
I was a bit suspect about the
not in this round though, right?
No, not for this round.
I know you're worried about BYU.
Yeah, I'm worried about BYU in the next round. If that should happen, it looks like it's probably going to happen. But for you guys last night,
oh boy, here
you and my man Sean Mapes.
Yep.
Horns up getting into the tournament. Horns up on the fact that you're trying to save Rodney Terry's job because you love him.
We weren't trying to save him.
But then kick down to the grapes as in more ways than one. You took one in the shorts last night. I actually turned it off. I thought you guys were going to win.
Oh, well, see.
And I woke up to the oh my God, what happened?
You haven't gone through the tournament like Sean and I then. And Sean, please jump in here in a second. But I mean, that the lead grew to 13 in the first half. I believe it was 9 at intermission, but it never felt safe. I mean, the Longhorns got hot, but you knew they were. I mean, the game was basically a home game for Xavier too, which is another part of it. But you knew they were one run from seeing Texas completely turtle up, and that's what happened. Overall, Trey Johnson was great, but some of his decision-making with the shots, and especially that sequence where when Xavier hit the three to finally take their first lead since 10-9 in the first half, Trey Johnson comes back down to the other, and he's great. He's going to be in the league probably next year.
Yep.
But he immediately comes back down, takes a forced, like, fall-away, fade-away three, misses it, and is late getting back on defense, runs down, and gives this half-ass, like, shove. Nothing's worse to me when a guy, you don't commit to your defense assignment of getting back on defense. The guy beats you down the court, and instead of either letting him go or completely take him out so he can't get the layup up, he can just give this half-assed
You wanted him to Fred Van
push,
lead him.
Push in the back, so they get an N1, and the game was just completely over at that point.
So there's a lot to uncover here.
Well, Rodney Terry's days are numbered. He's got to be gone.
I said he was gone before the tournament last week started.
I thought he had a chance depending on what he did in the main tournament. Like, I thought a Sweet 16 run, not that I'd want it, but I thought a Sweet 16 run would save him. Obviously, that didn't happen.
Now, there's a lot that's coming with this, and you guys as Longhorns, that's why I bring this up. Before we even get to the coaching aspect of this, I saw some of the criticism of the fact that from an NIL perspective, they were only willing to give big NIL money to one player, who you mentioned.
Trey Johnson.
But that as a program, they're not distributing it to get the kind of team that Texas needs. So do you see that as a problem, as well as the fact that now, you know, with all the facilities, with all the money, with the university that is the University of Texas, you would think that they should have their pick of whoever the hell they want, like they supposedly have had in the past when they've been trying to get Calipari in there. They've kind of wined and dined guys in the past. But is there a bigger problem in terms of with NIL and how the university and the boosters handle this? Or is it now everybody's going to be fed up to the point where, no, now we got football under control, now we got to get basketball?
Yeah, I don't think money's ever a problem at the 40 acres. And they've obviously had, and I'll defer most of this conversation to Sean here in a second, but they've obviously had some transfers. Tremont Mark obviously coming over from Houston. Kaluma was a big transfer for them from Kansas State.
He's good.
So they've brought over some you know, name players from big programs. So it's not like they're only relying on the guys that they actually recruit as freshmen. But way in here, Sean. But I don't really worry about the money being passed around on the 40 acres.
I worry about it on the super high end of NIL spending. Like they're not gonna spend with like Duke and Kentucky and teams like that, just because, you know, when you're asking for a donation, a lot of times these NIL donations, you can put what you would like to this donation to be for, what you want this money to be put in for. And I'm just going to go out on a limb and say most Texas boosters want it spent on football, and that's kind of the way things are. I mean, someone sent me a tweet during the game where someone was talking about Kendall Weaver, one of the players on Texas, and the entire tweet was, man, Kendall Weaver would be such a great wide receiver 3/kick returner. And A, I agree with them. B, I think that's the problem with Texas basketball, is that the fan base watches the basketball game go, man, this guy's good. Imagine if he played football. That's kind of how things go with the Texas basketball program, that it does get put on the back burner. I mean, until 2 years ago, they played at the Frank Irwin Center, just this dilapidated.
It was a dump.
And that's the thing. Like, you're right, Sean, because I've heard forever and a day, too. The Rockets, we used to have training camp in Austin, and 1 year we had it at the University of Texas. And all of our guys walked away shaking their heads going, their facilities, their budget for gear and shoes and equipment is like double to triple what the NBA was. They had two full-size courts on in their practice facility. Why isn't this program the top of the national programs for basketball? And we were told, because there's not that much concern and care level for that the way it is football. And it's similar to me in that, you know, we used to talk about Rice baseball. Well, Rice baseball was the only thing that Rice had going for it. And the ironic thing was they were like second or third in the nation in endowment. But most of the people, to Sean's point, said, we're going to give you money for a university. We just don't need this used on athletics. If you're using it on athletics, we're not giving it to you. That's why baseball was like this anomaly where they were still able to succeed. But other than that, Rice was never going to be good. I think Texas now, with the state of football, it wouldn't take much to get this program right in the top 10 again.
Yeah, especially since, obviously, much smaller roster. So you increase the top-level payouts from 1 to 3, yeah. And all of a sudden that completely makes over your roster on the top end. And it's why I remember hearing Colin Cowherd say this. I mean, this is 10-plus years ago at this point. But I agree with you, and it was kind of goes to a point you were making there, Joel. But Texas has a potential to be one of the elite jobs in all of college basketball, because not only does it, you have the recruiting base, you have the facilities now, especially with the improved arena. You've got the potential there for a lot of money, and because of what you mentioned with football and the priorities there that Sean laid out, and he's 100% right, you also don't have the same amount of pressure. I mean, Shaka Smart was mediocre for 6 years, and he still got 6 years. He won zero tournament games, and he still got 6 years. Can you imagine if, you know, how long would it take the Texas football coach to, you know, not have winning seasons before he got fired? Far less than six. Tom Herman got 3.
Yeah, I was going to say Charlie Strong is holding up 3 fingers right now.
Yeah. Charlie Strong got 3. Tom Herman got 3. Actually, Tom Herman, I think, got 4.
He got 4.
But, yeah, so, but that's the point. I mean, Shaka Smart was extremely mediocre. 6 years he's there. He makes a tournament 3 times, doesn't win a game, and twice he loses to much lower seeds, double-digit seeds, but the most embarrassing one, the 3-14 matchup against Abilene Christian in his last season there of the 40 acres. So I think because of the expectations, that has a chance to be a really attractive job.
I would think a lot of guys,
but maybe this is, like you said, maybe this is what gets the –
But don't y'all feel greased. Like Beard was that guy that they were actually going to recommit it?
He was, screwed it up. But obviously what happened.
I think that's part of the reason the Rodney Terry thing went the way it did, is that the Chris Beard hiring was like a kind of chips in moment.
Yes.
And then once, you know, obviously what happens, he gets the police called because he choked his wife. And he's no longer the coach, then there becomes a little bit more apprehension about giving all the same resources to a guy in Rodney Terry, who, yes, did make the one run when he picked up for
that. Yeah, it wasn't his run, right? It was the perfect storm.
Exactly, exactly.
Like 7 games into the season.
And then, other than that, his coaching experience is being an assistant for Rick Barnes and coaching at Fresno State and UTEP. That's not the same as Chris Beard, who played or coached in a national title game in 2019. So I do wonder if this is a reset button, that maybe they do get that level of commitment again if they can get a name that gets people excited. But, I mean, that's part of the thing, is that they did have the perfect hire in Chris Beard. It just didn't work out.
All right, I've got a candidate that I need to run by you guys when we come back, but I do want to give you guys some of the scores. Auburn right now has opened it up on Alabama State, 58-38. Clemson, again, still trailing at the half, 31-13. The game that we're all going to be watching is Gonzaga and Georgia. The winner plays U of H at 3:35. We'll keep you updated on that. Right now, BYU, VCU, 22 apiece. Go Rams! Because I'd rather play VCU as Wisconsin than BYU. But we've got a lot
Careful
more for
what you
ya.
Wish for.
Hit us up. Keep us on your dial. We're going to keep going. NCAA updates continually throughout the show. But I've got a question for these Horns Down guys today.
Now.
They're down. You're down. You lost. You're not feeling great about it.
Now.
Let's see if this guy's name will get you horns up to get ready for Longhorns basketball. We'll take a break, come back with more. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Texas Tailgate Sports Bar Patio in Edo. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey, we just said our goodbyes. Samantha's family reunion, part 6, has just ended. But we love having the family around. But Joe George is here signing autographs. He'll take a few selfies. But Texas Tailgate is where you need to be. If you're in the Edo downtown area looking for a place where you need to escape, where you can catch all the games of college basketball, hang out with us, enjoy some great drinks, happy hour specials till 7 o'clock, this is the place to be. It's perfect. It's nearby everything else. They're going to do their own version of the cook-off this weekend as well. Kobos Q is involved. J-Bar M is involved. So a bunch of our friends are going to be involved. You can get tickets via their going to their Facebook page and their Instagram page. But we're having a great time out here. And, of course, the number one topic that we're discussing is everything to do with the NCAA tournament and the fact that with the two gentlemen I'm working with, both being horns, I have this question because I've heard this name multiple times now. And we were talking about before the break who is going to be the successor, because I think we all agree that the Chris Beard experiment was supposed to be what turned this Texas basketball program into a perennial powerhouse.
It was, briefly.
And then
very briefly.
As Sean put it, with his common-law wife, allegedly, he did some things that caused some things.
That Ole Miss didn't care about.
Got him, out of the way. And Rodney Terry stepped into the perfect storm to take this team deep into a run, get himself a contract. Now he's going to get himself fired. The name that I am hearing, and it is not big names of the past, and obviously Will Wade would have been a guy that I think that a lot of people would have liked to have on their list, and he, before he even got out of the tournament, and had done anything else, he's accepted the NC State job.
Right.
So I'm curious what you guys think of ex-Longhorn Royal Ivy, current Rockets assistant coach, because now I've heard this from multiple sources that Royal Ivy is going to be in the mix as the next coach at Texas. Your thoughts, boys?
I was a little hesitant at first just because it's such a big job and such a tough conference. I mean, the Longhorns made the tournament as a 13th. They were 13th seed in the conference and made the tournament. They're just an incredibly deep conference. So, I mean, I think the initial thought was this has got to be, big name hunting. This has got to be an established guy who's been there, done that, won in multiple places. Obviously, Sean Miller has been a name that's been thrown out, the guy that knocked Texas out yesterday.
He's a good coach.
He's already left Xavier once, went to Arizona, didn't work out. Now he's back with them. Sorry?
He went back to Xavier after the Arizona debacle with recruiting? No, I'm saying because he and his brother both coach.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know he went back to Xavier.
So, so I think that's the initial thought, like big name. But I think I like the idea of Royal Ivy. And obviously, the pushback is going to be he's never been a collegiate coach. He's like you said, he's an assistant on the Rockets right now. But, I mean, it wasn't that long ago when he was coaching for South Sudan in the Olympics and brought South Sudan to a one-point game against Team USA. Yeah. So it's intriguing, and I think what is most intriguing beyond that, maybe he can coach. He's obviously spent time under Ime Udoka. Mm. He's South Sudan. That was really impressive. But I think this, being a former Longhorn, being a four-year Longhorn, not a guy that was a one-and-done, might be something that gets the boosters interested. Like bringing back the Texas X, the guy that was there during some better times, I think that could be something that would bring the boosters in and maybe rally the troops like, okay, let's get behind one of our own. And if they were able to get that money in, it may be, okay, don't send my money to football this time. Let's actually get an extra Trey Johnson instead of just the one. I think that could be something that would be big for the program. So it wasn't initially my first choice, and it still might not be my first choice, but I'd be fine with that hire.
Sean Mapes, your thoughts?
Yeah, I kind of fall in the same bucket as Brian, where I think Royal Ivy, if you told me, tomorrow that it's going to be him, I just would like to know what the other candidates were because Chris Del Conte is a guy who's now hired a few different coaches across different sports. And, other than Steve Sarkisian, which has been the best hire so far, and he is a name hire to some extent, but everyone else, it's Chris Beard you're taking from Texas Tech who coached in a Final
Four. The baseball thing was savage.
Yeah. You're taking Jim Schlossnagel or Schlossnagel from Texas A&M. Like he is making big moves.
Data.
And a lot of times he is not firing the guy until he has the hire already lined up. He did that with Tom Herman, where he fired him after the bowl game, and 20 minutes later, or maybe it was 2 hours, had Sarkisian lined up. So I think that there will be some sort of there would be some big game hunting going on, and if Royal Ivy is the coach, that tells me that despite what they say at the introductory press conference where everyone's always the first choice, I don't think he would be the first choice in this situation. But I still think he'll be good because of how much more, I guess, NBA-ified college basketball is becoming with the transfer portal and things.
Well, but that's
like
where
that.
I'm at, Sean, because my question then would be, yes, he's had coaching experience, but that didn't involve NIL, and it didn't involve the transfer portal,
yeah,
and it didn't involve the recruiting efforts that are going to have to be done year in, year out, to where college coaches are saying, hey, look, it's now 365, it's 12 months a year, it's 24/7. And you don't know what you don't know. Yes, you know he played there. Yes, you know he knows the game, and coaching is one aspect of the game. But the game is so much bigger now. It's how much money are you bringing in? It's how much money are you kicking out? It's, you know, recruiting, and then after you recruit, can you keep it going? And I just have concerns that he doesn't have that kind of experience as opposed to maybe some other guys out there that have coached in college recently.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sean, just a second. I guess my answer to that would be, as the guy that was on that that last Final Four team, you know, alongside T.J. Ford, I think his name in the fact that he was a part of that of the Texas's greatest success, you know, of the last 50 years as a basketball program, I think if he's aligned with assistant coaches who could walk him through some of the NIL, some of the stuff he hasn't had to deal with as a pro coach, I think it'd be beneficial not only because he's a great coach, or at least we think so from what he's done with the Rockets in South Sudan. But I think his brand name would help bring in some of the money, help bring in some of the recruits. And then if you partner him with assistant coaches who know the ins and outs of how college basketball has changed, I think that helps him get through that transition period.
Yeah, and just with the fact that Texas basketball is different than Texas football, where you're not in these giant recruiting battles all over the place trying to get huge big name guys. It's normally, you know, they have one kind of one and done type guy and a bunch of older players, especially now the transfer portal era where every team is just much older than they were. I think it's going to be a good coach. It's a lot of talent identification and a lot of coaching those guys once you get them all together. And those are things that I think are more transferable from the pro game to the college game, because so much of the recruiting now is just like how much money you have or can you sell me on the opportunity that I'll have here. It's less having to go to a bunch of high school gyms and watch 16-year-olds and make good relationships with those guys, with the high school coaches. It's much more, hey, here's how much money I have. Would you like to play and be my starting point guard?
Yeah, but okay, so here's the thing. I think from NIL money perspective and from booster perspective, I think that the weight will carry with Royal Ivy because, like you said, he played on the last Final Four team. I think where it's going to be challenging, and maybe the NBA experience can help, is the fact that from a recruiting standpoint, no one knows who T.J. Ford is. So you're going to have to go into these kids' living rooms, and you're going to have to say, as much as you – I mean, the money's going to talk, so that's going to be key. But then what are you going to do? And it kind of goes back to the earlier discussion about, are you going to pay everybody or are you going to pay three or four guys – because of the fact that you're going to have to go into these kids' houses and tell their parents, not only I'm going to look out for your kid, but we're going to provide all this for you, and we're going to get multiple guys because we want to compete at this level, and that's where it's going to be and have to be an all-in with his staff. Like when Belichick hires, you know, Lombardi to be his PR guy, I mean his GM guy.
Right.
You almost think that they're going to need a GM guy that's going to have to dictate from a Texas basketball perspective, hey, we're going to do this differently, we're going to do it right.
You're right, but kind of getting back to one of Sean's points that he made, look, you're right. I think if you're going into the living room of a 19-year-old, there's a good chance he might not know who T.J. Ford is. Like, he wasn't alive when T.J. Ford was in the Final Four, so that's a fair point. But getting back to something Sean said, I think what recruiting has now become with the transfer portal and NIL is less going to the living room and talking to mom and dad and developing the relationship. It's, we have $2 million. Do you want it? So I think if Royal Ivy, because of the name brand amongst the boosters, is able to bring that excitement to the program and they decided to commit to it in a way that they haven't in years past, then I think if the money's there, that's ultimately all that matters. Because there was I forget the name of the kid. The best example I could think of, though, there was like a year or two ago, in college football, a player who really, he said, like, man, I really wanted to play for Florida State.
Oh, no, it was the LSU, lineman yeah. coming out of Florida.
And, like, he openly yeah. said, like, yeah, man, I really wanted to go to, you know, Florida State or whatever, but, you know, shrug emoji, LSU offered more money. And we saw
he didn't say that. Remember, he said on the signing day, he goes, yeah, we were really hoping to get touch base exactly. and have one more phone call. We didn't get it, so we're happy to be
like,
here. But, man, I wish I'd have played at Florida State. It's like, what are you doing? You're going to LSU.
He's signing with LSU telling you his dream was to go to Florida State, but he went there for the dollar. What happened with Michigan and LSU with the quarterback?
$10.5 million
Exactly, $10.5 million So I think that's what it is today. So I get that, you know, people, the kids might not know Royal Ivy. They didn't watch him play, these 19-year-old kids. But if the money speaks, they'll be there.
All right, so let's talk about Royal Ivy's current team, the Houston Rockets. They've won 8 in a row. They won in the land of Disney last night. They got another victory. How are you feeling about this squad, currently the number 2 seed in the Western Conference? We'll discuss some Rockets next right here on the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5. The Killer Bees are live inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Texas Tailgate Sports Bar Patio in Edo. Now back to Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Texas Tailgate's a place you ought to be. Come out and see me, Brian. You can hear Sean. Here till 6 o'clock. Unbelievable atmosphere right here. Cougs fans were here for the big game and the big win for University of Houston earlier. Lots of games still going on. They'll be going on all night and all weekend here, and this is the place you should watch it. It's Kitty Corner from the Dynamo. It's a fantastic environment. They're going to have a lot going on this weekend with their version of a cook-off. They're going to have J-Bar-M involved, Kobos Q involved. You buy your tickets, and that gets you 3 samples, gets you a vote in the best barbecue for the cook-off, gets you drink tickets, and get you this phenomenal Edo environment that's right here off of downtown. It's fantastic.
I don't think I could pick between J-Bar and Kobos.
It's tough.
Like, I think I'll have to be soft and call it a tie. I don't know if I could pick my favorite barbecue between J-Bar and Kobos. They're both
seriously, they're
elites.
Both phenomenal. Fat Boy Texas Barbecue, which is out here with a food truck, they're going to be involved in it. There's going to be live music. There's going to be a shuttle to for VIP tickets for a concert after the event at J-Bar-M. So that you can check out all their information on the Texas Tailgate Facebook and Instagram pages. We're going to be here till 6 o'clock having a good old time. Tournament action, Auburn now has taken full control of Alabama State, 68-47 with about 7 minutes to play. Clemson doing their best to make it interesting.
Still 21
McNeese
points.
State, 45-24, 12 minutes to play. BYU, 34-28 over
one.
VCU. And Gonzaga, woo! Look out, Cougs.
Yeah.
The Zags are still hot. They're beating Georgia 23-3, and if they win, that's who the Cougs play in the next round on Saturday. So beware, I warned you, the Zags, unlike Reed Geddes told you, the Zags are good.
Yeah, I didn't want to call them out when it happened.
I didn't either. I looked at Jeremy off mic going, oops.
I think Reed may have only watched that one game from Gonzaga and based his assessment on that. But, yeah, 23-3 with 12 minutes still left in the first half for Gonzaga. I mean, not to say that the game's already over, but Gonzaga,
yeah, you better have more than one NBA prospect on your roster, Georgia. You got some work to do, so that's a big one to keep an eye on because the Cougs play the winner of that game. But we were talking about Royal Ivy as being a candidate for the University of Texas. Part of that is because he's doing such a great job as part of the coaching staff for Ime Udoka and the Houston Rockets. Rockets win their 8th game in a row. They're calling it the mechanical bull run.
Okay.
Because Craig Ackerman vowed to ride a mechanical bull.
He did at the start
of this streak, and now they've won 8 straight. Love my boy Craig, so I'm giving him a shout out.
So what was the situation now?
They dared him to ride a mechanical bull.
Like if it reached a certain...
No, he just said he wanted to at some point during the season.
Okay.
They were looking far and wide for a mechanical bull. They happened to find one, I believe, in New Orleans, of all places. And they put it on social media. He finally rode the mechanical bull, and right after that, they've rattled off these 8 straight wins.
Okay.
So the mechanical bull run.
Undefeated since Craig Ackerman rode the mechanical bull. All right. I think we found the answer whenever they eventually lose a game then.
They beat a Magic team, but I'm curious your guys' thoughts. We've been, Brian and I specifically, not Jeremy, who loves him some Jalen Green. We've been hot and cold on hot and cold Jalen Green.
Yeah, because he's hot and cold.
Tari Eason played well last night.
He did. He was big.
Jabari has been playing better of late. I'm curious what your guys' takeaways from a Rockets victory in Orlando last night.
I mean, you mentioned it. The Rockets started slow. It was kind of that way. You know, in the first quarter, they got down and then closed on a run and had the lead at the end of one. Same thing. The Magic were up 8, I think, with just under 8 minutes to go in the second quarter. They went on a run. The Rockets got a little sloppy, had some turnovers, and then they turned it on and obviously punctuated it with the Fred VanVleet buzzer beater to be up by 4 at halftime. And then at that point it was pretty much all Rockets, other than falling asleep a little bit late, make it kind of
interesting. Boy, that's where I'm going.
With about 2 minutes ago, and I can't remember who scored for the Magic, but he had the and-one chance, got it to 7 with like 2 minutes ago. It was a little interesting then the Rockets fell because the Rockets fell asleep for a little bit, but that 12-0 run in the third quarter pretty much ended the game. Shengun was good. Jalen was good. You mentioned Tari Eason. I thought Tari Eason and Dylan Brooks were really big pieces of the turnaround the second quarter when they were down by 8. Tari Eason had a couple buckets, nice assists, offensive rebounds. It felt like he had his hands in a lot of the big moments of that comeback. So overall, you know, obviously the Magic aren't great. They're, I believe, the 8th seed in the East.
Yeah, I think they're underachieving. I think that team has more talent.
I would agree. Obviously, Paolo was great. He led all players in the game with I think 30 points. So overall, impressive win. But we still see the up and down moments that I think is natural for a young team.
Sean,
yeah, it is the up and down kind of. They haven't played a clean 48 in a while, and a lot of that is. Just because of look who they're playing. They're in this stretch of a bunch of below 500 teams that they're playing, a lot of them Eastern Conference teams. And I remember before the stretch, we're setting our expectations for like, well, they're going to have to rack up some wins here. And I thought, yeah, you know, I think it was 13 games. I was like, 9-4, I'd be happy, 10-3, because they had scuffled a little bit recently in February. And so to rip off these wins is impressive in itself. It's just I can't really draw a ton out of it as far as looking ahead to their ultimate goals, which they did do a part in clinching a postseason appearance. They have clinched a play-in spot at the very least with the win last night.
First of all, on that note, let's
postseason.
Let's stop with the whole clinched a playoff spot BS that everybody's trying to hang their hat on. It's going to happen, and when it does, then you should really you can celebrate it. But we're not celebrating it right now because getting into the play-in round is not technically the playoffs. Hate to break it to you. You qualified for at least one more game. But let's get one of the top 6 seeds. That's something to celebrate.
They could lose every game for the rest of the season, and it would be a success because they made the play-in. Joking there. But the level of competition that they're playing just isn't something where I feel like, you know, they can get away with this in playoff basketball when they're going to have to play the Grizzlies or the Lakers or Nuggets or Warriors or whoever they play.
Like, the schedule, by the way, coming up is going to test them a little bit.
That's like their last 5 games are all Western Conference contenders. So it is kind of the opposite of this stretch where, they've been kind of playing with their food a lot lately. I mean, that Sixers game was just 5 different times during that game. I'm like, all right, well, they 100% earned this loss, and they ended up winning. So I think this is another example of them. And some of it's a good thing that they are so talented that they can kind of, you know, goof off and still win a game relatively cleanly. But ultimately, like, I just need to see them do it against a Western Conference team that I actually think is playoff caliber.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Like, you know, from my standpoint watching the game last night, the issues that I've had continue to be issues for me, which is at the end of the game, when you're supposed to just put your foot down on their neck one last time and end the thing, you kept giving them hope. You kept breathing life into almost lifeless team and kept them within shouting distance of screwing up another game.
7 points of 2 minutes ago. It's not, they went to the line and could have made it six. So, I mean, that's not a game.
Like
that was
Sean
over.
Said, the Philly game is the perfect example. That's not insurmountable.
But I'm saying,
when you're only up, when the Rockets are down 7 with 2 minutes to play, you can make that up. Tari Eason, as good as he plays, as much as I harp on Jalen for the same thing, the final quarter and the final 5 minutes of a game, he finds a way to do not so intelligent things that has got to change, because the biggest thing that you need this team to do is figure out how to way to close games. They do it for 3.5 quarters.
45 minutes.
They do it for 45 minutes of a 48-minute game. They do all the things that make you say this team is close to being a contender, and then in the final 3 minutes they go, this is why this team is billed as a bunch of young kids, inexperienced, that need to taste the playoffs. So good that they're still winning, but I'm really looking forward to this next stretch of about 5 to 7 games where you go, okay, now let's see what you're made of, because I think as much as you've been kind of riding high on your horse after you get by Miami, as Sean mentioned, the schedule's going to really put them to the test, and it might be the best thing for them getting ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, because we can't forget where the Rockets were before this win streak happened. Like, we were, I think, all wringing our hands a little bit for how poorly they were playing. Before last night, I don't believe they'd won a road game since January 28th. And this win streak started with 2 wins over the Pelicans. You had a bad 76ers team with no one in it other than Quentin Grimes, who went out for 46. Obviously, the Magic are a team that's been disappointing. You get to face Miami next, who I believe has lost 9 in a row at this point. So it hasn't been filled with, the best of the best teams. So, I mean, while it's great because it puts you in a spot where now with 45 wins, you're almost assuredly going to get to 50. You're almost assuredly going to have a top six seed to where you guarantee yourself a playoff spot. I don't think we can forget what happened right before it, because I don't think all those problems have necessarily gone away. They just played lesser teams.
There you go. Okay, so they're going to be on the road again for a game against Miami coming up. We'll have that to look forward to. But coming up next, we'll get into some of our Texans talk, because DJ Bienemy is going to be joining us in the next hour as we break down the extension for Danielle Hunter, and yet what might that lead to if you're a Houston Texans fan? 1 hour in the books, 2 hours still to go. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.